This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any. And except we're going to save some for Watzel.
Yes. So, Lori, if you're listening on February 16th.
You already had some.
Yeah, like the thing that you could have some of, you ate a month ago.
Yeah. And what is that thing, Matthew?
That thing is eclairs.
Yes, we are talking about eclairs. That is the French pastry that took the world by storm a long time ago.
When was that? I guess we'll find out.
We're going to find out.
Yes,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Matthew, let's begin on memory lane.
All right. So my eclair memory lane really, you know, I know I had eclairs as a kid. Did I have eclairs? I don't even know. Like, I remember them as being like a fancy dessert thing that would be really special if you got one. I used to occasionally get one at, what was the name of that place down on East Lake? Just before the University Bridge that I don't think is there anymore.
Oh, that place. There was a bakery there.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if it is in fact out of business, it's okay if we don't remember the name. Anyway, you know, that place, that French
place.
Bakery.
And it was on the south side
the
of
south
the
side
University,
of University
Bridge.
Bridge. Yeah. But my real eclair memory lane comes from a few years ago when wife of the show, Lori, and I went to Toronto for a weekend, a mini break. And there was this eclair place, which is still there, called Nougateau. That's N-U-G-A-T-E-A-U. They specialize in fancy eclairs of many flavors, like 24 flavors. They've got like cafe au lait, vanilla pecan, matcha yuzu. They did an array of Chinese-inspired flavors for Chinese New Year. And it is the kind of fancy shop. It's across the street from a park. So, of course, I got a couple of eclairs. We got a couple of eclairs and ate them in the park. And, you know, they assume you are buying them for gifts and they're quite expensive. And so buying them to eat across the street in the park and stuff them into our faces, like, we felt like the rankest barbarians.
Yeah, this is I've had that experience at Pierre Hermé in Paris. In fact, I had the experience with friend of the show, Francis Lamb.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe like supporter of the show, but I don't know if she'd want to be called friend of the show, Winnie Yang.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've met Winnie. I mean, Winnie isn't, she hasn't been on the show.
Oh, right. But
you have
I mean,
to be on
she,
the show to she, be friend of the show, don't you?
No, I don't
no?
think so.
Okay,
like,
friend
is
of the
she
show,
your
Winnie
friend?
Yang.
If she's your friend and she listens to the show, then she's a friend of the show.
Okay.
I think that I just came up with that definition,
great,
but I stand by it.
Okay. Anyway, yes, we went to Pierre Hermé once and then went and sat in a park, and I have a Polaroid somewhere of Francis biting into like an extremely elaborate, expensive pastry. One of life's great pleasures is like buying an expensive pastry and eating it outdoors with people you like.
I think all the time about when we got the Pierre Hermé,
yes,
Deux Mille Feuilles at Isetan.
And
in
then
Tokyo,
we went,
and then
we went up to the top floor.
To the roof garden. We ate it there. It is messy as hell.
And there were jungle crows.
And there were jungle crows, like, lurking, waiting to take our scraps.
Oh, that was really enjoyable.
It was
I remember
so great.
The bench we sat on.
Yep.
Oh,
and
it
that
was
dessert
perfect.
Is so good.
God, it's so good. Okay. So actually, you know, since we're talking about Paris, I'm going to talk about Paris.
Oh, please.
So I remember seeing eclairs growing up. You know, La Baguette is a French restaurant in Oklahoma City, and they had a little bakery, and there were always eclairs in there. And I just remember, so I was averse to anything that had like a custardy texture.
Okay.
And I must have been told that there was like a custard in there, and I wouldn't go anywhere near it.
But didn't we do a custard episode where we determined that like literally everything is custard?
Yeah.
Forever?
Maybe. Anyway, and also growing up, I think that every eclair I encountered had chocolate glaze on top and had like vanilla custard inside. Like if you saw someone eating it or saw someone cut into it, it was always vanilla inside, right? Well, I remember when I was living with a host family in France, there was a boulangerie down the street. It was my first time ever seeing that there could be more than one kind of eclair, which I think is now commonplace knowledge among people who like to eat pastries. It was my first time seeing that if there is an eclair with chocolate glaze on top, there will be chocolate pastry cream inside.
Ooh.
Yeah, this was what I encountered in boulangeries.
That's like a general thing in Paris, that it's not usually chocolate glaze vanilla cream?
No, I mean, I think of that as being like kind of a, like, eclairs outside of France.
Yeah, because I think of that as like the standard, but I didn't know.
I mean, you might have a vanilla eclair with a chocolate glaze, but in general, when I go into a boulangerie in Paris, which I have not done now in like a dozen years, when you see what looks to be a chocolate glazed eclair, it will say like chocolat on a little tag in front of it.
Okay, nice.
There's also coffee eclairs.
Oh, yeah.
And if there's one thing I think we don't do enough of in the States, it's like coffee custards.
Oh, so good.
So anyway, a coffee eclair would have like a coffee glaze, coffee pastry cream inside. And I remember everybody at the time that I was over there, this would have been when I was living with this host family, it was like 99, 2000. I remember everybody was very excited about this Japanese pastry chef who had a pastry shop in France. His name is Sadaharu Aoki. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right.
Watzel said that
Aoki?
Yes, Sadaharu Aoki.
Okay.
That is one of the patisseries that she is excited about going back to the next time we go to Tokyo.
Yeah, yeah. He's still going strong. I looked up his website. Yeah. Anyway, what he was really well known for, at least when I first remember learning about him, is his eclairs, in particularly his various like green tea flavored eclairs. So a matcha one, a ganmaicha one.
Nice.
Also a black sesame eclair. What he's known for in general is bringing like Japanese flavors into French style pastries.
Yes.
All this to say, I never have eaten any of his pastries.
Oh.
But when I started researching for this episode, for some reason, his name was the very first one that came up in my little
memory. You just Googled it, Claire? Oh.
No, in the computer of my brain.
Yeah.
That said, and we're going to talk more about this in a minute, but there's a variation on an éclair that's called a religieuse or a religious.
Yeah, I can sort of
religious.
Picture that.
And that's the word for a nun.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, so instead of piping your choux pastry or your choux dough into a log shape, like an éclair, they will pipe it into two spheres.
Like one big one, one little one?
One big one, one small one. And then they stack the small one on top of the big one and kind of cement it in place with a little bit of like frosting or glaze.
Isn't that like a common brioche shape also?
Yes, yes. I remember stopping after class at the boulangerie down the street from my host family and getting a coffee religieuse. And it was incredible. And it's like, the great thing about a religieuse is as you can imagine, there's like kind of more pastry cream. I mean, it's bigger than an eclair.
Yeah.
A true delight.
I have a question. Would you say that a Boston cream donut is America's eclair?
Possibly.
I know it's not baked, but.
No, but it's playing on the same flavors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk about what this thing is.
Okay.
So if you've ever made cream puffs or gougere, what are other places where you use choux dough?
Those are two for sure.
Great. And by choux, I mean C-H-O-U-X.
Yeah.
It's a dough you make in a saucepan.
Yeah. Wife of the show, Lori Ann Totsdy, took a choux pastry class, I think with Sunoko Sakai.
Okay.
Where they made it and like made cream puffs at home and they were really good. And like I find the prospect of making choux pastry so terrifying, even though I don't think it's actually that hard.
I once, in another one of my previous lives, when I did that column for Bon Appetit.
Yes.
God, that was truly ancient history.
Mm-hmm.
That was 2000.
That was back when there were magazines, when every magazine wasn't just like, you know,
a website
all about Justin Bieber, like 100 pages of full color photos of Bieber.
Okay. Anyway, that was 2008 to 2011. Anyway, I did a little essay about Gougère. And that was my first time. So I used that column as a way of challenging myself to try making some stuff I'd never made before, yeah, like country pâtés and sausage and stuff like that. And I made choux paste, and it was so much easier than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Way easier than I thought it would be.
How did someone come up with the idea of, like, you make a dough, like, heat a dough in a saucepan and then bake it?
No, I have no idea where these things come from. Then again, where did somebody ever get the idea to make, like, laminated pastries?
Yeah.
Especially, like, with the sheer volume of butter that goes into like a croissant dough or a puff pastry. Like, where did they get this idea? Like that was like, well, let's just, no, more butter. No, I mean, no, even more.
Yeah.
More.
Have you heard the great hardcore punk band SVOB, Sheer Volume of Butter?
Jeez. Okay. Anyway, so you make your choux paste or a choux dough, you pipe it with a pastry bag, and there is like a great art apparently to piping it for eclairs, because obviously, you know, you want this like finger of wet dough that you're piping,
but not a to be shattered finger
to be, you know, like the perfectly straight, perfect size thing. But also, if you have done it correctly, it will bake up into a hollow log, so
right,
that then you can fill it with custard.
That didn't even occur to me that, like, if you pipe your eclair just like a little bit wonky, like you're not going to be able to sell it.
That's correct.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, like, I assume that means that probably if you work in a patisserie, you get to like eat wonky eclairs in the back room.
I think that a lot of eclairs in the States are way bigger than they are in,
yeah,
France.
Yeah, the ones in Toronto were pretty like finger size.
Yeah, yeah. I like that.
These ones we got today are not like super like floofy, but pretty big.
These are pretty big, but not as big as they sometimes get.
Right.
I mean, sometimes they truly are like shoe sized.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah, I ordered like the size 3 here.
Then, so you bake these like little logs of dough. Once they're cool, you fill the
Le Fournil. That was the place.
Yes, there we go.
By University Bridge.
That sounds
Bridge.
Familiar. Yep. Once the baked dough is cool, you fill it usually from underneath. You make a couple holes underneath, and again, use your piping bag to fill this hollow log of dough with custard.
You know, I think I did know that they're usually filled from underneath, and yet when you talked about filling them, I imagine someone sticking the piping bag nozzle like into the end and, like, you know, kind of like squirting a
yeah,
rope of pastry cream into there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Anyway, so in the U.S., it's most common to see them with chocolate glaze and a vanilla pastry cream inside. I mean, in fact, I think a lot of people, like, that is what an éclair is for,
yeah,
for most mm-hmm. of us. And then, of course, in France and in fancier bakeries in the States and outside of France,
bakeries,
you can now find many different flavors. And it looks like that is what we've got today. Many flavors of éclair. What do we have here, Matthew?
Okay, so I went down this morning to Le Panier at Pike Place Market, which opens at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, what made you choose Le Panier? Because there are so many bakeries in France. I mean, there's so many bakeries.
Well, okay.
In France.
So first off, France was inconveniently located for this morning.
There's so many bakeries in Seattle that make éclairs.
Okay. This is the one that came to mind as probably open early,
yes,
and probably has some classic éclairs.
Okay.
I did try Bakery Nouveau and they don't make them these days.
Okay.
But Le Panier is like a very kind of old school French bakery that, like, you know, hasn't really like updated their menu much since the 80s when they opened. You in a good way. And so we've got vanilla with vanilla custard, pistachio. I don't know the custard on that one. We'll find out. And a chocolate. Wait,
wouldn't it be a pistachio custard?
I think so, but I'm not positive.
Okay.
Like it's clearly a pistachio glaze with chopped pistachios on top, and then chocolate glaze with vanilla custard.
Okay, great.
So can we dig in?
Yeah, where do we begin? I mean, should we begin with the classic?
Let's start with the classic.
Okay, I mean, I know that this kind of goes against our cheese plating philosophy because we're starting with the chocolate one, which
cuts very, very nicely.
Oh, I do like how it holds up under the knife. There's no squishing of glaze.
Okay. Oh, no, no.
Oh, yes, it's chocolate filling on the inside.
It's chocolate filling. I was totally wrong.
Okay, wait,
yeah.
Matthew, I'm not going to eat this first then. Hold on.
Okay.
Don't eat it first. You'll ruin your palate.
Okay. Well, let's do vanilla.
Let's do vanilla.
No, I'm so glad this turned out to be not what I expected. Okay. Should I use a different knife so I don't get chocolate on the vanilla? No, I'm just going to like use a different part of the same
There's
knife.
There's something about this white glaze that is...
Kind of jizzy.
Kind of jizzy. I'm glad you said it.
I know.
First.
I could tell that didn't cut as smoothly as.
Oh God! There's something about this glaze that is just really difficult for me.
Mm.
This one, so you can see the hole in the bottom where the filling was piped, doesn't look like it has a lot of filling.
No.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm not loving this vanilla.
Woo, that's sweet.
It's very, very sweet.
Mm. But kind of good in like a supermarket cake way.
That is what it's like. It's like one of those pudding cakes that you're always posting a photo of me holding. Okay. No. This is working for me.
I enjoyed that. I mean, I think that in France, this would be an abomination.
But like,
I mean, I don't mean to be mean, but...
That's true of most things sold in the U.S.
I'm going to interpret that broadly. Okay.
Like what?
Well, you just said most things sold in the U.S., so like... I don't know, like a pair of jeans in the U.S. would be an abomination.
Probably. Like, you know, what do they think of?
They love American jeans.
Okay, fine.
Well, at least they did the last time I checked, which was a long time ago.
Okay, this looks like, this pistachio one looks like it's got more filling.
Oh, that tastes like pistachio. That's a more sophisticated vibe.
I feel like the cream is a little grainy.
Fair enough.
But it's good.
I don't think either of these creams have been exemplary so far.
No, but...
But that was a nice balance of sweetness to pistachio flavor.
Okay. Can we go chocolate?
And I really like that it actually tastes like pistachio and not almond extract, which is sometimes used to heighten what should be pistachio
flavor. We recently watched Mickey's Christmas Carol, as we do every holiday season, and there's the part where the ghost of Christmas present... calls a pistachio a pismachio, which is really fun to say.
This chocolate one may be my least favorite. I don't like the flavor, the texture of the chocolate cream. I mean, I'm going to finish it.
Yeah.
Why do I never think to eat these? They're so delicious. Why do I not eat this more often?
So I think the creams here are all highly thickened. A lot of cornstarch, maybe.
They're a little too stiff.
Probably so that they will like hold up with like, you know, tourists will come in and like get some eclairs and like they'll be bumping around all day.
Or they'll be eating them on the street. I mean, there's no risk of a glob of pastry cream falling out of these.
I think that's kind of what they're up against. And so I think they, you know, working within those difficult constraints, I think they did an okay job.
I think they've done a quite nice job. I'm into that.
And it's super fun. Like, I was so excited to go in and see three different flavors of eclairs.
Yeah. I believe that Rosalini's, which is the bakery next door to Delancey, I believe Rosalini's makes a couple of eclairs.
Well, why didn't you bring any over?
I don't know that they would have them this early in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, I got there at like 8 o'clock and they were stocked.
Yeah. No, Rosalini's is a smaller operation. Yeah, I don't know if they'd have them, but I bet they're delicious there. I feel like an eclair is the kind of thing that I don't think of it as something that I would eat for dessert after dinner.
Yeah.
I think of an eclair as like a special thing to have in the afternoon. Like, I'm going to go meet up with a friend. Like, let's go get an eclair and like sit on a bench and eat it.
Yeah, like in a park in Toronto.
Exactly. But now I want to like go to Rosalini's one afternoon and get an eclair and like feel the breeze in my hair as I eat my eclair and so on and so forth. I just made that up.
You just wrote the pop hit of the summer.
I just made that up. It's going to be a hot eclair summer.
It sure is. And that's how I like my eclairs served, hot.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
We haven't even talked about the history of these things, and we've already eaten them.
Well, so what does the name mean?
So in French, éclair means a flash of lightning.
Wait, are you about to go into an etymology without calling upon Etymology?
Is Mr. Etymology here?
Yeah, but today you're Mr. Etymology. Mr. Etymology is like a spirit of like a dead etymologist that can inhabit either of us.
Oh, so we're both like mediums.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, I'm Mr. Etymology. I am Mr. Etymology.
Maybe not the hit of the summer.
Okay, anyway. So, éclair means flash of lightning.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, you'll encounter it in like, you know.
In a stormy night.
That's right. According to Wikipedia, the pastry gets this name, well, for reasons that don't seem plausible to me. Neither of these reasons seem good, but here's what Wikipedia thinks. Wikipedia thinks that the pastry is called an éclair because it is eaten so quickly, i.e. in a flash.
I'm not buying it.
Or possibly because the glistening of the glaze on top resembles lightning.
Maybe.
I'm sorry. No.
No.
Then why, like, do we call rain puddles éclairs? Like, they glisten.
Maybe we do. Like, maybe, have you ever watched the French language version of Peppa Pig?
Oh, we're going on holiday. Want to eat lots of eclairs. Oh, Daddy Pig.
Oh, so the French language version is still in English, but they just do French stuff? Okay.
That's I was just riffing. Okay, so anyway, let's talk about the history of this, which I also found unsatisfying.
Okay, great. I thought you were going to say also about unsettling.
No. So, according to Wikipedia, the éclair came about sometime in the 1800s in France, where it was called pain à la duchesse, or petite duchesse, like little duchess, until around 1850. The word éclair first shows up in English and in French in the 1860s.
Is that because, like, duchesses in France were reputed to have a body type that was, like, purely straight up and down?
That's right. Yes, it was that the éclair resembled the duchess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She had a very oily complexion. In fact, the light glistened off of it. Candlelight glistened off of it like lightning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, no, I'm kind of into this duchess.
Anyway, so because I was unsatisfied with this explanation, I went looking in other places on the internet.
Wow.
On Serious Eats, I found an article by Christina Razon. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing her name correctly. We'll link to it in the show notes. She says that éclairs are said to have been invented or popularized by Marie-Antoine Carême, who is considered to be one of the founders of modern French cooking. You've probably heard the last name Carême. Anyway, he lived from like the late 1700s to the first third of the 1800s. And he was considered like one of the early, like, I hate the term celebrity chef, but he was like a chef who people actually like knew of widely.
And Carême is French for creamy. And that also referred to his complexion, right?
No. Anyway, one of the first written mentions of eclairs in the U.S. is in Fanny Farmer's 1886 Boston Cooking School cookbook, where she describes how to make them.
Okay.
So in any case, they seem to have come around sometime in the 1800s. We don't know how. We don't know why. But long live.
Long may they reign. Long may this Duchess reign.
Yeah, that's right.
So wait, so when did the name change from Duchess bread to éclair?
So we know that the word éclair was in use in the 1860s.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So it seems like it could have been like a, you know, a marketing thing that like one bakery came up with and then everyone started using it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe the early ones were squiggly. Maybe they were like lightning bolt shaped and they were meant to be shared. Maybe they were like meant to be shared. It was like a fougasse or something where you can break off sections of it.
Actually, the law in France is you're not allowed to share them. You'll be cited.
That's right. That's right. It's like the law that you – or the law – I think it's still in effect where a baguette is capped at a certain price.
Yeah. No, I think so. Like they're like – if it's a variation on a baguette, you can get around it. But like the standard one.
That's right. Like if you're selling like a baguette à l'ancienne or like a fancy baguette, you can jack that price up.
Yeah. Baguette à l'ancienne.
Matthew, do you want to say anything else about eclairs?
No, like this does make me want to like start having like eclair afternoons, like you said.
I feel like this could be a really nice thing to do with your spouse. Like how, you know, we talked on the soft serve episode about how Lori surprised you with like a little detour to the soft serve place when you were out on a walk. Like you guys could go get éclairs.
Yeah, an éclair détour. Probably not even how you say detour.
What about
in French.
A tour d'éclair?
Yeah, that sounds good.
You could do a walking tour of Seattle, stopping to eat éclairs.
Okay, yeah. But are there really like, is it really as common? Like No. I thought it was going to be hard to find. It didn't turn out to be hard to find. But
I think that, you know, I'm formulating this thought as I say it, but I think that French pastries, even in like French bakeries in the U.S., I think they tend to skew toward breakfast pastries.
Yeah.
You know, I think when we think of French pastries, we think of breakfast.
Yeah. And lately, like more and more like macarons like are just like taking over the whole pastry case.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Even like I'm sure when Le Panier opened in 1983, they didn't have a huge macaron selection, but now they do.
Rosalini's, which I mentioned next to Delancey, has a whole macaron.
Should we do a macaron episode? I think we should.
I feel like we would need to get a guest on, like a pastry expert, because I've never tried making them and I don't intend to. And they're quite fiddly in terms of trying to get the feet.
Yeah, you have to like let them dry for a certain amount of time or something.
Yeah, so let's talk about who we want to get to come on the show.
Like I have a phobia of piping anything. Mm. Like I even like get a little scared when I'm playing Super Mario Brothers. but like I'm just always afraid that like the tip is gonna fall off or like the stuff is gonna come out the wrong end and you know, blast me.
Yeah. The only thing I really pipe these days is the occasional batch of stuffed shells. Because my kid loves stuffed shells.
Yeah.
And inevitably the piping part, I feel like I'm pretty decent at it, but even then, like, it's always a mess.
Yeah, and sometimes you smoke that corn cob pipe. All right, should
we
move on?
Is a corn cob pipe, is it, like, just a corn cob that's been, like, hollowed out and, like, whittled to resemble a pipe?
I am so glad you asked because my other podcast is called
Smoking Pipe Paraphernalia of Yore.
Yeah, it's SPOY, smoking paraphernalia of yore or spoy. like we talk about like corn cob pipes, cigarillos,
there's like cigarette holder things.
Yeah, the cigarette holder things. Like, I feel like in the movie Annie, Miss Hannigan had a cigarette holder.
I
thought it was so puzzling when I was a kid and wanted to know all about it. My parents were like, we don't fucking know.
Yeah, this is something that has like shown up in movies for so long now that we've never actually seen someone authentically. Like, there's no one alive who's seen someone who authentically uses a cigarette holder.
Yeah, I'm sure like some hipsters have done it ironically. So to answer your question, like I'm one of the internet's main pipe go-to, you know, you've got a pipe question, you come to me.
Yeah. So what's a corn cob?
And the answer is I have no idea. Like, I assume either it's the thing you said or it's like wood carved to look like a corn cob.
Maybe that would be cool.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
What's like the kind of like big trumpety shaped pipe that like Sherlock Holmes smokes?
There must be a name. You know, my dad used to smoke a pipe.
Really?
This was before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom occasionally sort of gets this wistful look in her eye and talks about how she loved the smell of pipe tobacco.
It smells good. Like I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but my elementary school principal smoked a pipe outside during recess.
Yes!
Which, like, can you imagine?
Never.
Principal of an elementary school smoking a pipe at school.
Did he also wear like a corduroy jacket with like elbow patches?
Yeah, he was like a dapper old man.
Yep.
I think his name was Herb.
Yes! Yes! Okay.
All right. Yeah. So join us next time for our new segment, Pipe Guys.
Listen to Matthew's new episode or new podcast, Spoy.
Spoy.
Smoking paraphernalia of your.
Let's move on to some segments.
Okay. Do we have any spilled mail?
We do. This comes from Listener Anonymous.
Ooh.
I have a redundant dessert story. So once again, this is a spilled mail that is in response to something we said or requested on a previous episode, and I do not remember what it was.
Yeah, okay.
I have a redundant dessert story. We have friends who do an almost annual New Year's Day brunch that is a casual potluck. So one year, pre-pandemic, I brought the spice cake from Odalenghi/Helen Goh's cookbook suite. Not long after arriving, the mother of the host came up to our group and demanded to know who made the Odalenghi cake, which is how I found out I made the same cake as she did. She then proceeded to grill me on why mine was better. I used a homemade blend of Chinese five spice that gave it a different flavor, but hers came out denser and greasy, so our best guess was something in her technique. Our friend later came to tell me that her mother wasn't the best at following directions.
No wonder this listener wanted to be anonymous.
Following instructions and recipes. So that's the awkwardness of bringing a redundant dessert, but I don't think it really mattered since easily 50 people attended this brunch. I'd rather not use my name since I think the hosts may listen to your podcast.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. I think that this letter came in response to a different letter where somebody mentioned like the horror of redundant desserts.
And we were like, this has never happened to us.
Yeah.
Right?
No, it's never happened
to
me.
But apparently it happens. Like, I feel like there was a lot of humble brag in this letter, and I'm fine with that.
Oh, I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you are going to use a special Chinese five spice thing, and if you are better at baking than your friend's parents, you should definitely brag.
Yeah, everyone who fits those descriptions, write in. We want to hear about it. No, I assume our listeners are the people who bring the best thing to the potluck.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. I want to give a shout out to Diane. Diane,
okay.
You know who you are.
All right.
Diane, if you're listening to this, you, I bet, might have a interesting baking story to write in and tell us.
Okay. Yeah, let's hear it,
Diane. Here's a challenge to Diane. Diane is our neighbor who takes Gilbert to the park sometimes for us.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is this the moment where you find out that Diane claims that she listens to your podcast, but actually she doesn't?
Diane showed up recently to pick Gilbert up and was like, sorry, I'm late. I was just, you know, driving around sampling all of your fast food favorites at all the different fast food places in town.
Oh.
And for a second, I thought that
it was true.
I thought it was true. And then she laughed and said that it was
a joke.
But I was like, oh, Diane, you're the best. Anyway, yeah, I want to hear from Diane.
You're the best. Yeah, I do too.
Matthew, what are you snacking?
Hey, what you snacking? You gotta tell me what you're snacking. Or I'll release the kraken. So what you snacking?
What you snacking?
This I had an amazing coincidence happen this morning. It's not going to seem as amazing as I just made it out to be. But lately I've been snacking Bavarian Meats Landjäger. Have you ever had this stuff?
No.
I bet you have. So Landjäger is a German salami stick that is in a very particular sort of flat rectangular shape. So like if you cut a cross section, it's sort of a elongated rectangle. And it's just a really satisfying shape that feels good to hold in your hand and like gnaw a bite off of. It's a great thing to bring like on a hike.
And it's just the right density to bite into. It's not hard enough that you would need to slice it. And it's not so soft that it's like a hot dog.
Yeah, it's just a really satisfying meat snack. And after I decided to put it on as my whatcha snacking this week, and Bavarian Meats is a venerable local maker of German style sausages and salamis in Seattle. But you know, any Landjäger you find in your local market, probably going to be pretty good. I was out walking this morning on my way to pick up eclairs for this episode, and what should I pass on the ground but a wrapper from Bavarian Meats Landjäger that someone had littered. And so I guess I'm in favor of littering now.
Great. At Ballard Market, they have like near where they have all the like salad bar and cauldrons of soup and stuff, they have like a bulk bin of Bavarian Meats Landjäger, and June likes to stop by there and get a couple to have around for snacks.
It was a favorite snack of Totsdy when they were little. Little chunks.
They're so good. You know, I was recently really hungry at the grocery store. I was not at Ballard Market. I was at PCC, and they had Cremonelli brand. They called mini salamis.
Yes. Oh, I know exactly. Those
and
are great.
Those are great too. It's like a Landjäger, but like a small baton shape, as opposed to that kind of flattened.
Many years ago, we did an episode called Meat Sticks, but I think maybe we only talked about Vienna sausages and Little Smokies.
That sounds right. That sounds like us.
That sounds like us, yeah.
Matthew, I have a now but wow. So this is like really old news. And because our listeners are the kind of people who always bring the best thing to the potluck and are always reading, you know, lots of books and are just generally excellent people.
I mean, the good news is by the time this airs, it'll be even older news.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to make sure that everybody is reading the poet Ada Limón, who is she's currently the poet laureate of the U.S.
Oh, okay.
She has written many books of poetry. Her most recent one is called The Hurting Kind. It came out in 2022. She is one of those poets who manages to write about like very real or like non-rarefied, ordinary, sometimes even vulgar life.
Oh, nice.
And to write about it in a way that heightens it, does that magical thing that poetry does of like making this leap to metaphor. I've been thinking about Ada Limón a lot lately because right around the end of the year, Ezra Klein of The Ezra Klein Show reran an interview that he had done with her in the middle of 2022.
Okay.
And I had missed it the first time around. I listened to it. It was like exactly the kind of thoughtful and delightful conversation I wanted to hear around the beginning of a new year.
Yeah.
And it just got me fired up to read poetry again. So all this to say, if you are not yet reading the work of Ada Limón, do it.
All right. Our producer, the producer laureate of the podcasting world, is Abby Circatella.
That's right. You know what I want to mention today?
Yes.
So I teach workshops in writing.
Yeah.
And I am teaching two in-person workshops that are coming up in the first half of this year. One is in Santa Fe in late April. One is in Southern Colorado on a ranch in June. And you can find out about them at my website. So go to mollyweisenberg.com and you can click on the link for upcoming workshops. I would love to see you there. You don't have to be a writer. You just have to be interested in trying it.
Yeah. Sign up for Molly's workshops. One of the best writing teachers around.
Wow. Thanks, Matthew.
Please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that I think by the time this episode airs, we're recording it about a month ahead because Molly is going on parental leave. I think by now the first single from my upcoming EP will be available, and we're just going to drop it in and force you to listen to it at the end of this podcast.
Okay.
It's called Cornerstones. It is by my band Early to the Airport from our upcoming EP Departures, and it includes incredible guest vocals by Steph Hackett. And here it is, Cornerstones by Early to the Airport.
Terrific. All right. Well, you can chat with other Spilled Milk listeners at our Reddit. That is, what is the actual thing?
Oh, everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com.
Terrific.
And until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk.
You know, we too are shaped like duchesses.
We too, the two of us are
shaped like one duchess.
No, we're like, we look like two duchesses in a trench coat.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
I almost said hello. How many years have I been doing this show? Okay.
Hello. Hello, governor. Okay. That's how we start every episode.
Tillamook Chocolate Collection ice cream is a total chocolate game changer. We start with unbelievably creamy dark chocolate ice cream. Then we add different chocolate treats, like chocolate cookies, chocolate cake, or chocolate brownies, to make four decadent chocolate flavors. Because sometimes the thing that pairs best with chocolate is more chocolate. Tillamook Chocolate Collection Ice Cream. Extraordinary dairy.